will be taking from the room as well as from the Adobe Connect room. And there is a microphone, a remote microphone, sitting on the table right in the middle of the room. And when we when we're ready to move forward with Q&A, for those in the audience, feel free to grab the microphone. Someone will have pressed the on-off button for you so that you'll be able to use the microphone, and I'll queue up the questions so that either myself or Jenny Kelly can answer those for you. So, Jenny, for your benefit, I'd say we have about 50 folks here in the room with us in Brussels.
And, thank you.
Robert Hogarth is our remote participation manager, and he's waving his hand to the audience. And so I think we'll start now. We have an hour. It does run into the lunch hour, but both Jenny and I are available to stay beyond noon if we have lively discussion, debate, you know, and or questions from all of our participants today. So let me begin by sharing with you today's objectives. And I apologize if the screen is a bit small, but as you know, we're sharing this screen remotely through the Adobe Connect room. But for those who can't read the screen, I'll quickly tell you what our objectives are. We're starting off this morning with a brief history on the Who Is Accuracy study, and then a brief review of NORC's findings that were published, again, in the draft report that was posted on February 15th. Then Jenny Kelly is going to lead us through a presentation involving a review of the public comments. And here I think you'll find most interesting that, you know, we've summarized those comments on the basis of, you know, ongoing who is concerns, who is suggestions, essentially suggestions for improving who is based on public comment and feedback, study criticisms. As we know, no study is perfect. And then future study suggestions, as well as some recommendations on how those studies ought to be conducted. And then we'll end the session with a summary and next steps, which I hope will be a lively discussion in terms of some of the ideas that have been communicated by the public with respect to information education opportunities or activities, future policy studies and initiatives, and then a quick overview of some enforcement and compliance opportunities that my team has identified based on the results of the study. So let me start first with this, you know, overarching question, because as many of you may or may not know, this study was commissioned by ICANN in the latter part of 2007 into the early part of 2008. And when the study was commissioned, there were questions about, you know, why is ICANN undertaking this work? And as many of you know who have participated in some of the previous workshops on the study, these bullet points were communicated as essentially the answers to that question. You know, to provide the community with statistically valid information regarding the percentage of domain names, you know, that contain accurate WHOIS, and Jenny will take you through that. To provide information that we hope would be useful in setting future policy development, as well as providing guidance from the study and from the public with respect to enforcement processes and procedures that could improve the overall accuracy of WHOIS in the future. And then finally, to contribute, as ICANN does in all of its undertakings, to the ongoing community discussion regarding the ways in which WHOIS can be not only enhanced, improved, but in the future perhaps even coordinated or managed differently than it is today. And all of that, I believe in everyone's view, ought to be undertaken for the benefit of registrants and those in the community who have and use WHOIS information on a daily basis. So the background piece is essentially that we've known for years that there are inaccuracies in WHOIS. And there are varying levels of opinion, varying levels of interest that have expressed what those inaccuracies are. But there's been a bit of uncertainty around the extent of those inaccuracies. So what this study attempted to do was to take a very fundamental sort of building block approach to understanding the baseline percentage of records, who is records that contain inaccuracies. And I think you're going to find this interesting if you haven't read the report yet, you know, that we were looking specifically at two distinct categories of who is, which is the name and the postal address field. But Jenny will tell you that NORC in their work reviewed other who is fields, and I do believe that in future studies there'll be a further expansion on the baseline information that's being provided in this study. As you know, if you've read the report, once we can clearly identify the nature of the inaccuracies, then we can talk a bit about the barriers that exist today to improving who is accuracy. And Jenny will take you through some of her findings and conclusions in both of those areas. The next objective was to communicate the findings of this study to the community. And we've started that process by posting the study online in February. We've had three workshops on the Who Is Accuracy study at previous ICANN International meetings. And today, we'll be summarizing and reviewing the public comments and taking input from those who are participating in the workshop so that we can use that information in our next steps discussion today, as well as our next steps discussion in the report, and then finally publish the report on ICANN's website as a completed undertaking. And so that gives you, again, just sort of a sense of the background on what we're trying to accomplish. I'm now going to turn the slide deck over to Jenny Kelly in Chicago, and Jenny is participating remotely, and she'll walk you through a good portion of slides here that will take you in-depth into the report's findings and also into the summary and analysis of the public comments. Jenny, we'll pass the microphone to you.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Now, just to check, is my voice coming through okay?
It is.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody, for coming in today. In terms of one of the aspects of the history was that the GAO did do a study back in 2005 called the Prevalence of False Contact Information for Registered Domain Names. Now, in terms of the differences between that study and ours, there's, of course, sort of overlap and differences. The key part where they overlap is where the GAO study was looking for within a random sample of records, how many fields and how many records had missing information or patently false. And by patently false, it might be just, for example, a series of nines in a field for an address. When we did our study, we started off doing exactly the same thing, but whereas the GAO study then went off to look at how that information was updated and corrected once notified, we actually took a little step further into the accuracy to go, well, okay, a lot of information might look perfectly fine, it's sort of Joe Smith at 123 Main Street, but does it actually check out when we dig in a little further? And that's where we sort of go to our next slide, if you like, which is, well, what were we using as the accuracy criteria? Now, there's a lot of different ways you can look at the accuracy, and there are a lot of different fields. We could have gone through all the administrative fields and the technical contact as well. But basically, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement comes down to saying that with the registrants, they will make sure that the registrant's address is deliverable, that there is a way of linking that name and the address, that the person or the entity is known at that address. And so we were going through can we check that the address is deliverable? Can we find some association between that person and the address? And then when we contact them, do they actually acknowledge ownership? Because one of the hypotheses going in is that we may well contact Joe Smith at 123 Main Street to find that he didn't know what we were talking about because somebody else had registered the site in his name. Now, what we actually found at the in that little area of overlap, there a lot of similarity with the original GAO study in terms of the percent of records that were full failures, which, you know, a large number of those were very blank fields or patently false information. Applying though those additional criteria, we actually only found that 23% of records, and that's that blue segment here in the graph, were absolutely fully accurate and met all the criteria. Now, that's actually a fairly small percentage. When you relax two aspects of the criteria and say, look, okay, we might not have been able to find any independent link between the person and the address, but we still managed to track them down and they confirmed ownership. And an example of that sort of situation would be where there was no linkage, but we might have done a reverse phone search, for example, on the address. And when we rang that number, somebody answered. And we would say, if we had a name, is that person there? Or if we didn't even have a name, we would ask, is there somebody there who knows about this domain name? And in a lot of those situations, we did get to speak to somebody and they confirmed it. And taking that into account and also allowing people, when we did contact them, we would check them, you know, we would ask, these details, are they all correct? You know, and we would actually ask them if it, you know, go back to the time of drawing. So if we were interviewing them in August, for example, but we had drawn the sample at the end of April, so if they'd moved addresses, that wasn't counted as an incorrect aspect. But if the address they gave wasn't correct back at the time of April, then we would classify that as a fault. But if we sort of said, well, look, you know, they were easily corrected things and they weren't egregious faults, you come up to nearly half of all records being what I would call substantially just fine. The yellow and the brown segments there, they represent increasing levels of inaccuracy. So by the time we get to the brown area, we're really only ever able to establish one of the criteria, but nothing more. For example, yes, we could figure out that it was a valid postal address or that the address actually existed, or yes, we could find a company by that name. So, but no more information. In the case of the gold segment, that's usually we're able to connect two of the tick off two of the criteria, but not the third. In some cases, that was that we weren't able to actually make contact with the person to get confirmation. So there's different ways of looking at this, but I think the general result is that no matter how you sort of group these up, there's still a substantial amount of inaccuracy. I think from an ideal point of view, from the all the assumptions that people make about who is, you would want to see, you know, easily more than 90% being fully accurate in some way, and yet we're right down there. Now, in terms of the barriers to accuracy, and it's sort of worth spending a little bit of time on this one, because this comes through again in the public comments, which we'll get to in a moment. We were speaking with the actual registrants themselves, and a lot were talking about concerns about privacy, particularly ones where, for example, we didn't have a name, we only had the address, we rang the phone number connected to the address and we got to talk to somebody. We could actually say, well, why didn't you give your name, or why did you give only this detail that hasn't worked out? And the answer often was along the lines of they just didn't want their information out there for all and sundry to see. That is also, the concerns about privacy is also reflected in the rapid take-up of the privacy and proxy services that are out there. Another aspect was what the registrant understood that they were filling in. You've got some registrants who, obviously these are ones that, you know, usually have a lot more than one domain name, who are very savvy about how the information goes. So when there's an error on theirs, that's usually deliberate to protect their privacy, if you like. There's an awful lot of people who just didn't really seem to, I would call it a form design failure. They seem to get confused going through the registration process. In some cases, they had to enter the same information four times. It wasn't unusual, for example, to see a same as before written in some fields. So there just seems to be a very basic data entry type issue, if you like, or data collection issue when it comes to the registrant. Another reason why we were finding a lot of inaccuracies is fundamentally there's not a huge check at the point of entry. You know, the registrants don't need to provide any sort of proof of address. They can use, and there is some latitude in the wording as to what they give as their name. There's no requirement that it be a legal entity or the name that's actually, for example, on their driver's license. I would not be able to get a driver's license in the name of Jenny in Chicago, but I could, of course, if that was a well-known enough name, if people at work knew me as Jenny in Chicago, for example, I could possibly register a domain name using that. And that kind of name, of course, is useless for trying to find independent linkages and checking that somebody's there. It doesn't even meet your basic telephone standard requirement. Another reason for the inaccuracy seems to be that there isn't much risk of an omission being detected. In some cases, if you know you are entering information and you enter something wrong, particularly when you're trying to order something online using a credit card, for example, if you don't put in the zip code, you just can't get past that screen until you enter a valid zip code. Some registrars obviously seem to use that kind of system because some of that information was complete for some registrars. Others don't seem to have those kind of checks in place or requirements. And so that's one aspect of it, that the carelessness aspect doesn't get picked up. But the other thing too is that there doesn't seem to be any consequences at the other end. When we were speaking with registrants, one of the things that sort of surprised us a little was just how uncaring they were, in a sense. It's like, oh, really? Oh, gee. Yeah, it didn't concern them in any way that there was an error. They didn't see any adverse consequences to it. I mean, at worst, they might have to go and next time they were contacted by their registrar, fix something up. But when we were speaking with people, there certainly wasn't a sense that they were going to race off and fix any errors that they admitted to on the phone immediately. There is, of course, and this is a large barrier to accuracy, when you are dealing completely online, is there is a burden involved in doing any verification work. It's not like when you open a license and that's obviously a locally, physically controlled type of activity where you can produce evidence. There's nothing quite as simple as that over the internet. I mean, there are, of course, the sort of checks against credit cards, and we'll get to that later, but there's not really a easy way of getting people to provide proof of things at this point. And there isn't any sort of like centralized system. One of the things is how, when we had the Who Is Data extracted originally, was how different a lot of the fields are and how hard it is to get everything into a systematic format. Which means we had to spend a fair bit of manual effort sort of passing fields, making sure that we had all the name fields in the right place. And that's a barrier to doing any sort of like large-scale, centralized, standardized, automated checking across the lot. A last factor, and I've got this in brackets because it has since been addressed, is the limitations of the ASCII character set, and particularly when we're looking at some of the Chinese domain entries, for example, you could see where the errors could come out because you're basically playing that game, if you like, of, I think it's called telephone, where you take a translation and move it one way, and then you do a back translation the other way. It doesn't always translate into the same thing at all. But at least that one has been, you know, addressed by the community in the last year. Now we'll move on to what the public comments have been on this. And I would like to thank everybody who has actually submitted a comment. The comment period was between February and May. It was a little longer than usual. The original date would have been cut off in April, but we took comments through into May. And when it first went up, there was quite a few news outlets that picked up on the study and reported on it. And overall, there were actually 22 comments, although one comment was for something entirely different from the adult entertainment industry. So there are only actually 21 real sources, if you like. But between those 21 sources, we went through and passed out all the sort of individual ideas or comments that were in there, and we came up with 133 altogether. In some cases, it was a very simple one comment from one source, and they tended to be a couple of the earlier comments which came from individuals out there who were just sort of saying, I want my privacy protected. Then later on in the process, some of the constituency groups wrote very detailed, very well thought out and considerate critiques and comments on the process. One thing is, the majority of the sources that commented had something to say along the lines of they were very glad that the study had been done and that the results confirmed what they suspected all along. Interestingly enough, and I think this is a wonderful aspect, most of the comments were talking about how to move who is forward, what can be done to correct that system. If you look at the breakup of numbers, it's in blue here on the graph, the number of comments that were actually talking about the current situation. So they're either talking about who is as it is today, or they're commenting on the study specifically that we did, and either talking about aspects of the methodology or the scope. And then, but look at this lovely big box of, you know, 55 comments about what could and should be done about who is in the future, or what could or should be done in further studies about the situation. So in that, one of the purposes of this study was to get some information, to start discussion, to start a way forward. I think certainly that large degree of comment on where to take this has been a wonderful thing. Now, first thing is, I'll go through these, in effect, those boxes one by one. And we'll talk about what are the issues about, the concerns about who is as it is today. And the intellectual property rights aspect is a very key concern for a lot of the sources that commented. Following that is, and often related, is the criminal activity aspect. So putting those together, you know, one of the reasons why we've got a lot of people very concerned about the accuracy either usually comes down to being able to contact whoever's behind a website to either get something in it corrected or fixed. One of the comments said, you can't negotiate with no one. And that's the important aspect. It's like the registrant information is a way of getting in touch with somebody to sort of say that information you've got is wrong or it's infringing on me. Or in the case of the criminal activity, it's about reducing the number of completely anonymous domains where bad activity can be launched from.
Jenny, this is Dave. You'll have to speak a little bit louder, and then the numbers on the screen need to list the numbers behind each one of the comments.
Okay, I will. All right. So we've got 10 sources commented on the intellectual property rights. That was nearly half, and 8 commented on the aspect of the criminal activity. As far as privacy goes, there were 4 mentions of privacy, and the majority of these actually came from individual people, and they were saying that their concern about who is as it is today is that there is no protection of privacy. The information that goes in there goes up for public display, and there's not even a system whereby you know who's looking at it. People can actually view the WHOIS information quite anonymously, and that is an additional concern for some of the registrants themselves. So there were the 4 comments, and that was pretty much from 4 individuals. And then the last one is a single comment, and that came from the registrar stakeholder group. And their concern was about, well, accuracy costs, more accuracy, more cost. And ultimately, that's got negative consequences. They were arguing not just for their registrars, but ultimately for the industry, if you like. So they're the issues, I think, about around how WHOIS today. Then we move on to the large comment area where there's 55 comments. This is where nearly half of all the comments lay. And this is on what to do moving forward. And roughly there was sort of 3 sections, if you like, 2 comments here. And a large one was we need to take steps to improve the accuracy. And 31 of those 55 had some comment along these lines. And often it was a case of saying exactly what they thought needed to be done to improve the accuracy. And a lot of this was reflecting a couple of ideas that were in the report that had come out in previous discussions at workshops. So this isn't going to surprise anybody. You've heard all of these suggestions before in one way or another. The most common suggestion was, look, just do a check against the credit card information. Require that the registrant information that is in WHOIS is somehow matching back to the credit card being used to register the site or pay for that domain name. Obviously, pros and cons there, particularly when you get into privacy and issues about businesses that don't always have a credit card in the name of the business but that of an individual. But it probably is one of the easier automated checks to do because that's already happening in terms of the registrars checking that this domain name is actually paid for. Quite a few comments on going to a centralized database or clearinghouse or SIC registries type system. And in a way, I'm mixing a few concepts there, but it is the idea that this information shouldn't be sort of maintained in a lot of separate servers. There should be more standardization or even a single repository. And an extension off that one is that there's a single clearinghouse. Don't burden the registrars, if you like, with the burden of doing this checking. Have just the entity that's dedicated to that. Systems now, lots of suggestions about other automated systems, about sort of pinging an email address immediately, going off and using some of the automated address checking software. Most large online retailers have got some sort of system like this in place where they check that the billing, not just the billing address matches the credit card, but the shipping address is valid. So there's a lot of automation around that that would be possible. There's sort of questions about, well, just reduce these barriers to accuracy, which is along the lines of, okay, if people are worried about their privacy, then you need some sort of privacy flag. If people can't fill in forms accurately, then you need better form design up front. So just to really sort of analyzing some of those really simple things that can be handled in a way. Although I should say, actually, the handling of the privacy flag isn't such a simple one. But there's certainly, and this is, we'll get onto the privacy and proxy views later, but yeah, there was definite acknowledgement that to encourage individuals at least to give accurate information, there does need to be some protection of their privacy. Validating the contact information upon hosting, so that was just saying check it at the point of entry and also using the existing system. The next most frequent comment, and in a way it's very closely related, is just saying, well, there should be recognition of the fact that the information does need to be improved. And that was sort of related to the high number of people. I mean, 16 of the 22 sources were saying, yep, we don't like the quality of the data as it stands. The who is data is important. It just should be recognized that it needs to be improved. And one final comment was, well, why bother with an incremental solution? It's like, really, unless there's a flawless system out there, anything else is just illusory. Now, that's actually something we'll get onto later, is this view of incremental versus how far do you take this? But that's really more of a discussion aspect. That was only a single comment saying that it should go to a flawless solution. The general consensus, if you remove that one out of the group, was that incremental steps would be better than no steps at all. Now, as far as actual comments about the actual study itself go, there were 38 comments out of the 133 in total that said something about the actual study undertaken and didn't really and restricted the, you know, an aspect of their comments only to the study rather than to the broader who is issue. 10 of those basically said that they supported the study, and that was the most frequent comment. They thought it was a good thing that had been done, and 7 more went on to say the study confirmed what they thought, which contrasts with the group right down the bottom where there were 2 who specifically commented that they said they didn't agree with the percentages found. One thought that we were overstating, we had overestimated the degree of error. The other one thought we'd underestimated the degree of error. Moving back up, quite a few people commented on the study focus. Not the methodology as such, but this was really more of an issue of going back to what the entire design should have been. And the most common comment there was that the privacy and proxy services should have been somehow analysed in more depth. We should have been going behind the screen on the privacy and proxy to see how many of those registrants actually could be sort of traced back. And that, in a sense, is a very key issue with the whole privacy and proxy area. Several comments were that really this isn't about the registrants themselves, it's really about the registrars. The quality of the data is really what the registrars require of their registrants. And so why were we doing a random sample of domain names and focusing on the registrants when, in fact, we should have just basically done a sample focused on registrars to work out where among the registrar community the issues were? And others took a bit more issue with the scope and were sort of making the comment that, well, we should have been looking more at the administrative contact information because that's what it's asked for. And there's very good, I think, ideas involved with all of those. It's very hard when you start out with the first study to sort of come up with something that's going to meet everything. But certainly I think all of those concepts are good ideas for some kind of future study. There were a few comments on the actual methodology itself. And one issue here is, I'm not going to sort of defend any of these. One is that you couldn't verify physical addresses in all countries, and three people made that comment, and the specific example used was Ireland, for example, where there's no zip codes. But I would say that the lack of the address failure was only part of it. So even if we say that's, we'll take that criticism, it still doesn't affect the results. It doesn't really change the result, the main findings, a great deal. Two basically commented that the study size was too small. One came from the viewpoint that with so many millions of domain names out there, how can you estimate from a small number? And that's, I guess, a straight statistical issue that statisticians have been arguing for a long time. And generally, it's not the proportion of the population that determines the accuracy of your sample study results. It's how you've selected the sample and aspects like that. So that aspect, I'm not so sure really says anything too much. But the other criticism, which I think was a good one, was sort of saying, looking more at the odds of selection and saying, in effect, the smaller registrants, the ones who might have only had one or two domain names, would have been relatively harder to reflect in the study, and we couldn't find out enough, because of the study size, we couldn't break the study down to talk about individual registrars. Now, that's true. I mean, the study was designed to come up with a single global estimate. It wasn't designed to sort of be able to talk about the accuracy of country A versus country B or registrant A versus registrar A versus registrar B. So, in a way, that's partly a focus question. Some didn't really like the phone contact method, and others thought that the domain name expiration or deletion status should have been considered. Although I would actually answer that, you know, we did in fact take that into account. When we were searching databases looking for matches, we were actually looking specifically at dates to go, was that address accurate at that time? So, again, I'm not sure that really... It's a good point, but it doesn't invalidate the results. So I think overall, there was sort of good support for the study, some disagreements about scope, but then that leads us into really studies about or suggestions for future studies. And certainly there's a lot of call that the registrar should be the focus. And a third of these people commenting, 5 out of the 17, were saying, if you're going to do any more work, studies on who is, do something that basically allows you to comment on the accuracy of records from particular registrars. a call to, again, reflecting comments about the future of Who is going more into those proxy and privacy services and looking at the data qualities and the access issues involved there. Basically, things that would tie back to some of the simpler ways of improving the accuracy, and that's, for example, checking on email addresses, focusing on attention on known bad domains is another one. Two suggestions there. The suggestion that bulk registrants should be considered separately from individuals. Administrative contacts should be used as the first line. And a general comment just saying additional study should be done. Interestingly enough, quite a few of these suggestions are already underway in one form or another with some of the studies that Liz Gaster's policy group are commissioning. So I do think that some of these suggestions are exactly in line with where everything seems to be headed. Now we're getting into the last section, which is talking about summarising this and what are the next steps. And this is my last slide before I hand back to Dave. I think what one thing is that if there's any single takeaway from this study is that there is a very high level of inaccuracy among the WHOIS data. And that is reflecting what was found back in 2005 with the GAO study. Slightly different ways of coming at it, but the same end conclusion. In terms of where to go, I mean, the public comments did reflect a large, I think, cover the broad spectrum of the interested community. It's that you had the individual registrants being represented by some individuals. You had various intellectual property right groups and the users of the WHOIS information being represented, and there was also the registrar stakeholder group putting in their particular perspective as well. So I think actually there's a fair bit of balance across the comments that came in. So when you say, well, what might be behind somebody's comments, I think it's reflected in that broadness of the group. And there does seem to be general a fairly strong call there among the community for making some improvements and moving ahead with improvements and making incremental improvements. So not to wait until the final perfect solution can be found, but like, let's just say, let's start cleaning up the sloppy end. We know that people with active criminal intent are probably never going to leave their name and address, or some might. I mean, it's although, you know, you can't completely eliminate fraud. I mean, fraud happens with credit cards and all their additional checks and things like that. But you can reduce the incidence considerably. And it would be a completely different world if people thought, for example, that only 1 in 10 WHOIS records were going to be misleading versus the probably 5 in 10 that we're dealing with at the moment. And a lot of the support is also around saying, look, let's just fix some of the easy things to fix, like look for the quick hits or some of the things that can be done in just tighter editing controls on what goes in at the front end. But I think that this is probably back to where Dave should take over and talk and get some more input from the floor now about what else is possible. So, Dave, back to you now, unless there's any specific questions that I should address now.
Thank you, Jenny. I have one slide, and then I want to save the remaining time for questions. So let me go through this slide quickly, and then we'll open it up, you know, to the floor and to folks in the remote participation room. So as we looked at the public comments, there were three themes that emerged. And for those in the room who can't see the slide very well on the wall, those three themes are information and education, policy initiatives and developments, and then enforcement and compliance opportunities. And what we attempted to do was to just summarize a few ideas that were shared by the public starting purposes in conducting today's discussion. Under information education, overwhelming support to conduct additional WHOIS studies. In many occasions, suggestions that the ICANN website should be used as a tool to increase the amount of basic WHOIS information that's available to registrants. As Jenny pointed out, many of the telephone calls that she conducted with registrants, she and I and others were surprised to learn just how much registrants don't know about WHOIS. And then finally, there was a suggestion made that perhaps the registrar community would band together to develop and actually lead a WHOIS education program that could be deployed to their customers through their customer relationships as a way to further inform and educate registrants on the value of accurate WHOIS. With regard to policy initiatives, here there are several studies that have been proposed by the GNSO Council that address this, but in particular the privacy proxy issues needs to be further study, and that is being coordinated through the proposed studies that are under management by Liz Gaster at the moment. And then there was a call for an additional study with respect to WHOIS verification. It appears that some commenters felt that not enough is really understood or known about how difficult or how easy WHOIS verification actually is, and so there was some comments and suggestions that perhaps this would be a topic that should be considered for future study. Finally, under the category of enforcement and compliance, there was quite a number of suggestions that the ICANN WHOIS Data Problem Reporting System, that's the WDPRS abbreviation you see, that tool be enhanced and used more efficiently than it does today to address and resolve complaints involving WHOIS inaccuracy. There were many comments that the 2009 RAA now contains additional enforcement tools or methods that ought to be deployed by the contractual compliance function to further audit, review, and when appropriate, impose suspensions or sanctions perhaps on registrars if we find that registrars are in fact ignoring their responsibilities under our WHOIS data reminder policy to work with their customers to keep WHOIS as accurate and as current as it can be. And then finally, there was just a call for more regular and more vigorous audits with respect to WHOIS. And there, under the 2009 RAA, the compliance department has an increased toolkit, so to speak, with regard to the data that we can ask for and receive from registrars with respect to WHOIS records, and perhaps there is value in conducting additional audits that would help again provide information, education, and or enforcement and compliance work that would improve the accuracy of WHOIS. And so at that point I want to stop. I know that we have spent about 50 to 55 minutes on the material, and I suspect there will be more than a fair amount of questions. And so for those who can stay past the lunch hour, which begins in about 10 minutes here in Brussels, Jenny and I will stay on the line and be with you here to take as many questions as we can and provide answers as best we're able to do. And so I'll begin first here in the room and ask that if anyone has a question that they would like to direct to Jenny or to me, simply raise your hand. I'll keep a cue. And there is a microphone sitting on the table there that will turn on for those in the audience who want to get into the queue to speak. And I see actually the first hand up was Garth Bruin, and then we have Richard Cox from the Spam House Project. So, Garth, why don't you go first?
Thank you, David. My name is Garth Bruin from newjohn.com, and we have just completed our own independent review of Who Is, and that report is now published. And if anybody wants a copy, just get my card after the session, and that will be your ticket to it. I apologize to David because he heard this spiel yesterday, but I need to cover these items. As far as access to Who Is, we have found that 11 registrars have a lookup service that isn't real Who Is. We found 8 have non-working web Who Is engines, or they direct the user to some other Who Is service they don't control. In particular, a technology company, namesystem.com, is manipulating the Who Is record for its own website. They make it look like it doesn't exist. And since we published our report about this, they have completely taken their Who Is offline. As far as port 43 goes, 30 registrars have bad or inconsistent port 43 access. 55 registrars would not tell us where their Who Is engine is for port 43. 6 gave us inaccurate data, and a few of them, our email to them was rejected. 1 registrar, Domain Factory, said they weren't a registrar. As far as bulk access goes, in reference to RA 336, NameScout and Network Solutions refused to offer this service. Enom, Dotster, and Moniker did not respond to requests about the service. So here I've taken a step back. Before we even talk about the accuracy of the records, we can't even get to the records. Okay? We also found that 10 registrars have false Who Is records for their own websites. And, I mean, there's much, much more, and if you read the report, you'll see all of it, and it's pornographic detail. Now, there are lots of concerns about privacy, individual privacy, European privacy laws, about advocacy groups, about political dissidents, and by and large, this is not what we are observing in terms of Who Is obfuscation. What we are observing is a large-scale manipulation of this record set by known criminal entities. And we can prove this. So not to take up too much time and allow for other questions, I'm going to stop it there, and anybody can talk to me later. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Garth. I'll turn it over now to Richard Cox from the Spam House Project.
Hello, and thank you. Well, first of all, I'll say that I agree with just about every word Garth has just said, which is unusual, but I do. I won't touch on those points because I want to look first at the study. I've got some points about the future of Who Is. I'll come back to those later if I'm allowed to. And study's what we're here to talk about. And to Jenny, I wanted to ask a couple of questions. Number one, I'll give you them all together and then come back on all of them. Would you agree that from the results you've got, you would accept that the community is now very concerned about the situation we're in? Number two.
Yes.
Right, well, that's a good... it's always nice to agree on something. Now then, here we go to the meatier ones, where a yes-no is probably not the answer. Have we ever considered, when looking at Who Is, and accuracy and perhaps completeness, the issue of what the domain is being used for? I mean, domains can be used for hundreds of things. Private email, for example. Public comment websites, totally different situation. E-commerce, totally different situation. E-crime, it's everywhere. So, have we actually looked at that and asked ourselves whether the same flat standards need to apply across all of those situations? Now, obviously, the first reaction people would have to this is, well, that opens up a loophole just as privacy does today. I think possibly not. I think if there are different standards and you declare what a domain is to be used for, then its use, provable use outside that scenario would be a reasonable ground for suspension if registrars were prepared to follow ICANN's requirements, which, as we've heard, a lot of them are not. So that is the first point. And the second one relates to privacy. I wasn't completely sure, but I thought I heard you say that you were actually checking on the accuracy of information held by privacy services that are the back-end information as opposed to the published version. If that's so, I'd be very interested, because one of the problems with Who Is privacy services is not the fact the data is private, because anybody with the right paperwork should be able to access it, but the fact that there is no peer review of the data, and therefore inaccuracy will go undetected for a long time until there is something to give grounds for serving papers and therefore finding out there's a problem, by which time the e-criminal or perhaps IPR thief is long gone. And that's not the time you want to find out about it. Jenny, your thoughts, please.
Well, gosh, I think I'll address the second question first, because that is a straight, you know, direct methodology aspect. And no, we didn't. What I was saying is that there were some calls in the comments that we perhaps should have done that, although in discussions during the study, we decided that was actually out of scope. What we were looking at was fundamentally were the details of the privacy or proxy service correct, because they were the ones presenting as the registrant. But I absolutely agree completely with you. It's just that that is one of the big issues with the privacy and proxy registrations, that you just don't know quite what's sitting behind it, and it's harder to get to. The other thing is like, yeah, I do think that idea about the standards relating to the declaration, that's a really good one and is sort of certainly something that should be considered, because that does fit in with some of the European models of, if you're a private individual, you can use some sort of privacy flag. But if you're a business, and if you're doing online business, no, you must declare the information. So that does make a lot of sense. We did, as part of the study, try to look a little bit at classifying if we could sort of find a website and what connected to the domain and what kind of website it was. But those results sort of weren't, and certainly there were some correlations there, but they weren't very strong, because of course some of those email type sites return a site not found type message, so we didn't really pursue that a lot. That certainly would be something though perhaps to look at in a further study. So they were great suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm going to ask Rob Hogar to read a question that we have from the remote participation chat room.
Thanks, Dave. This is from John McCormick. Was there any domain age criteria applied to the sample to determine when the domain was registered and whether the quality of the WHOIS data could have decayed, deleted domain used for email, changed address or phone number, since registration?
Yes, we tried as far as possible to involve that. In terms of the total domain age, that was one aspect that we looked at, because of course part of the WHOIS record says when that was first registered, but there is that annual update. So interestingly enough, and I guess you would expect this, there was some correlation that the ones that had been registered for the longest were in fact among the more consistently accurate ones, and that would also stand to reason. In terms of the time and the decay factor, within a year, not a lot of information actually disappears. It's most, particularly the main database we were using to check the United States records, which were the majority of the study, when you sort of do a search on a name or a address, you get a history involved and the dates that things change in respect of that name or address and even the phone number. So where we actually got hits in that, we could sort of say, well, you know, was that person listed as being at that address back in April? And in most cases, we could sort of see where things had changed. I mean, you're quite right in that needs to be considered, in that I think around, when you're talking about households, something like 20% move every year in the United States and Australia at least. So there would be churn. As for businesses, I'm not too sure. But I don't think that the aging of the data itself was something that, you know, led us to have an inflated percentage of inaccuracies. I think we actually accommodated that fairly reasonably. One of the issues, you know, it's not aging of the data that is the main issue or the main problem. It's not that, although some people do obviously forget to update it. When we spoke with registrants and they commented on inaccuracies, and this was sort of something we had to kind of back out and make sure we didn't incorrectly include as an inaccuracy, is that we'd track them down at their new address and the first thing they'd say is, oh, gee, I haven't updated my record. So remind us to registrants to keep their data updated and also to help them do that. One of the comments, and this was an interesting one from an individual, was saying she just couldn't figure out how to update her information. She wanted to update it, she couldn't work out how to. Now, she doesn't give any more information related to who the registrant is or things like that, but I do think that is a common issue among a lot of individual registrants.
Thank you, Jenny.
Does that answer the question sufficiently?
Rob is going to check the chat room, and while he does so, I'll ask if there's anyone here in Brussels who'd like to ask a question. Okay, I see Bobby Flame and then Bob Bruin. Bobby?
First of all, thank you, Dave, for your recommendations that you had and the work that you're doing. The one question I just did have concerning the study and accuracy information, and I apologize if I've missed this as part of your presentation, but you had the, I guess, the postal zone and the state, but what was left off was the street address and some of the telephone number, which might have affected how the accuracy study was. So I just had that question. And then insofar as proxy registrations, there was 25% of the results were based on proxy registrations in which the underlying registration data submitted by the registrant to the proxy registrar was not examined for accuracy. The separate methodology used for proxy or privacy services described in Appendix 6 contained little information on how inclusion of proxy registration and limitations in having access to and in verifying underlying registration data may have affected the results. This is actually the Federal Trade Commission had these comments, and since they couldn't make it, I just wanted to ask those on their behalf.
Okay. Jenny, could you respond to both of those? And I know when Bobby read the statement from the Federal Trade Commission, if that wasn't clear, he has the microphone and can, you know, add some additional clarity if necessary.
Right. Okay. Now, have I taken my notes correctly? We didn't look at telephone number as whether or not that field was accurate in itself. And that was mainly because it's actually not part of the registrar accreditation agreement requirement for the registrants. It only talks about the name and the address. So that's why we were focusing only on name and address and not the accuracy of the phone number. But we were actually, and I wasn't too sure if I heard you correctly, we did actually check the accuracy of the street address. We weren't just looking at city or zip. We were going to street address as well. Now, have I answered that part of the question? Did I understand your question that part of your question correctly or not?
Yes, that was one of the questions, yes.
Great. Okay, now I'm sorry. Could I get you to revisit that second part for
sure,
me?
Sure, I apologize. I read that really fast. It says 25% of the results were based on proxy registrations in which the underlying registration data submitted by the registrant was not examined for accuracy. The separate methodology used for proxy services described in your Appendix 3 contains little information on how inclusion of proxy registrations and having access to and verifying underlying registration may have affected the results. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Probably two parts here in my answer. You're absolutely correct. I mean, there are a lot of privacy and proxy registrations in there, and we only went as far as sort of basically checking with the service that they and what we deemed an accurate record in those cases was that the service acknowledged that they were acting for that particular domain and that we had the correct details for the service. Now, that actually really is consistent with the definition that we were going with in checking accuracy. None of those services were ready to yield up information about those records. We don't know what the quality of those records are as far as the information that the services hold. And we also, I guess our experience was somewhat consistent with others who have sort of talked about one of the big problems then with the privacy and proxy registrations is how to get to that information when you do need to get to it. It is one thing that you can send some of the services say, okay, if you want to get hold of one of our, you know, somebody who's using this service, you can send the information to us and we'll pass it on. And that's not really what a lot of people are after. It's not about how to contact them, it's how to talk to them or find out who they are. And usually the minute that you're wanting to talk to them, it's often because there's a good reason they won't want to talk back to you. So that is, I think that's just a whole extra area that is obviously got a lot of controversy and a lot of issues to be resolved in it.
Thank you, Jenny.
In terms of how it affected our results, I'm sorry, was...
Oh, no, keep going.
Yeah. So there's two ways you can say of the how it was resolved. If you exclude, if you say, look, really for practical purposes, you've got to treat the privacy proxy registrations as a completely different kind of population. So let's ignore those and say, what's the accuracy of the remaining records? Then the accuracy starts looking worse because it was most of the privacy proxy registrations came through as accurate in that the domains acknowledged ownership and the services acknowledged ownership and the services gave their correct information. So where, you know, we may have understated the degree of the problem, if you like, if you take the attitude that you want to talk about who is excluding those services, yes, we understated it. If you also want to take the viewpoint of saying, well, what's the accuracy behind those privacy and proxy cases, I would have to say we don't know, and the only way we'll ever get that information is with the cooperation of the service providers.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have a question from Bob Bruin, and then we'll go to the chat room and remote participation.
Okay, it's Bob Bruin from New John. You had mentioned that you had contacted a number of registrants who had forgotten to update it, didn't know how to update it, but you could get in touch with them. What was your experience with not being able to find the registrant at all? You know, all the information was phony, the name, any contact information.
That was actually a tougher one. I think it's a very good question. With the ones who we couldn't get it at all, it was kind of frustrating. It's like that you don't know whether ended up referring to was ghosts in the system, because there was a name that looked valid, there was an address that was valid, but one that wasn't helpful in helping us to track somebody down. You know, post office boxes, for example. The post offices can't yield up information about who's behind a post office box, and sometimes the names are not unique enough to allow, other ways of tracking the person down. You know, it's the classic John Smith type name. So, yeah, when they were frustrating because you just didn't know if you were dealing with a person who was given perfectly good information. It's just that they've got a very common as mud name and are using a post office box, which is a completely valid thing to do from the RIA point of view and the definitions of what they need to give. It just leaves anybody trying to verify that information in this really annoying situation where you just can't get hold of it, you know, you can't check it. Or it could in fact be that's a really good way to enter information if you are trying to put in false information that you're not going to be called on. You just make it very hard to be, you put in that kind of information. So it's that was, I guess, our experience. It was pure frustration on that point. I'm sorry, now, did that answer your question or did I sort of miss the point a little there?
No, you did, but I have a quick follow-up. And the ones you could not find, did you see patterns of repetition of false addresses? Because we have seen that on our own studies, where the same name shows up in different places, the same phony address, you know, they're really inaccurate.
Yes, we did come across a couple like that. The majority, that's where we're getting into, for example, what we would call a multiple domain name holder, that there were about 10% of the cases that we originally went into thinking might have been a privacy proxy service, but turns out that they weren't any particular service. They were a multiple domain name holder, and some of those checked out perfectly legitimately, and there are a couple where we just couldn't get to them. So, yeah, I do think that they in a study, for example, or if you were trying to focus on flushing out those cases, that'd be a good place to start.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. I'll ask Rob Hogard to read a question from the chat room.
Thank you, Dave. John Curran asks, does either of the speakers feel that the present policy is unenforceable, i.e. that before attempting to improve enforcement, some change to the policy in the RAA would be needed?
Well, Jenny, let me start, and then you can answer that question, on following on my heels here. I think many members of the community know that there is a RAA a working group that has been formed to look at possible topics for future amendments to the RAA. And in that working group, there have been some suggestions concerning how to improve WHOIS accuracy. And I think that will have to be discussed and debated by the GNSO Council and others as that work moves forward. But under the existing RAA today, and with the new enforcement tools that we have available to compliance under the RAA, I do believe that there is additional work that we can now do that could begin to improve in certain areas the quality of WHOIS. And my team is looking at that right now, and we are preparing a WHOIS enforcement report that will summarize the current WHOIS enforcement work of ICANN contractual compliance, and within that report lay out some suggestions for further current and future enforcement work that we think can improve the state of WHOIS in the future. Jenny, is there anything you'd like to add from your work regarding the study?
Yeah, I just think from a statistical and administrative point of view, it does seem that tightening up that information would make a lot of difference to help improve the accuracy.
Okay, thank you, Jenny. I'll bring it back to the room to see if we have any additional questions. That's right, Faisal. I'm sorry. We have two folks who'd like to ask some questions.
Hey, Jenny. The study. I don't think the study was tabulated by registrar, and I guess I'm wondering if that information was captured, and if yes, can it be published? And then, if it can be published, can it then be used, or will compliance use it to be able to enforce against those that aren't complying with WHOIS?
Okay. We obviously did get the registrar as part of the WHOIS record, and yes, we did look at pockets of inaccuracies, if you like, and yes, there were certainly some registrars among them that had more inaccuracies than others, and there was one in particular that nearly every record had a problem, and I do believe that compliance are going to be following up with them.
Yeah, thank you, Jenny.
In terms of publishing it more broadly, though, no, that was part of the thing that we did say going into this study, was that we wanted to be able to get accurate information, and all we were trying to do was sort of come up with this overall percentage. It would be a different study fundamentally to go in and say, look, let's check the accuracy of individual registrars. You would have a completely different design. GoDaddy would have an awful lot less in the sample, and yeah, others. We had some registrars in there that only had one or two domain names, and you can't really say much on one or two. So it would be a different design.
Yep. Regarding the second part of that question, contractual compliance is currently reviewing that data with Jenny and others to determine, you know, where there are selected enforcement opportunities, and then to develop the enforcement approach, you know, using the information from the study as essentially the foundation for that work. So this is something we haven't done before, because we haven't had this data available to us through a study, but we're clearly willing to use that information to enhance our WHOIS enforcement work. We have another question from the room, and then we'll see if there's anything else in the chat room.
Hello, my name is Wouter Natus. I work for Opta, which is a spam and malware enforcer in the Netherlands. I'm also representing more or less the London Action Plan, worldwide spam organization, anti-spam organization. I'm currently chair of the Cybercrime Working Party within RIPE, RIPE NCC, which is a public-private initiative fighting cybercrime. I've been walking around here now for the fourth day by now, losing count. I hear that there's a lot of already in the recommendations on enforcement tools and that sort of thing. What I'm wondering is, what do we need to do as law enforcers to give you the information that would make it able for you to enforce? So how can we use the tools that are already there? The second question is on how are we going to continue? There's a lot of recommendations being given from the study. In what way and what time frame will that happen? And is there any way that we can give input to you on things that are important to us? Because in the end, I think it's all about knowing your customer, and that we would like to know who the crook customers basically are and are able to find them as necessary. So there should be something in it for both of us, for both sides, for industry as well as law enforcement, and that we don't have that many diversity between us, I think, if we look at it from a little bit more abstract way. Thank you.
Okay. Now, thank you for those comments and questions. Let me start first by reminding everyone that contractual compliance is here to serve the community. So at any point in time when you have information regarding inaccurate WHOIS, that information should be provided to us. And most individuals and companies do that through our WHOIS data problem reporting system. And that system is accessible through ICANN's website. And that is one tool that we use to gather that information, and then when we receive complaints regarding WHOIS inaccuracies, we forward those complaints to the particular registrar, and under the RAA, the registrar has an obligation then to conduct an investigation of that complaint to determine not only its merits, but ultimately then the registrar needs to determine what action, if any, they will take with respect to that complaint. And that is sort of a baseline, fundamental step in the enforcement process. Some of the ideas that have been suggested today, as well as some of the proposals that have been put forth in the RAA working group, suggest that enforcement, again, can be improved by enhancing the WDPRS system, and we're currently working to do that. Secondly, it's been suggested that the RAA in the future may need to be amended to expand the obligations upon registrars with respect to, the who is complaints they receive from ICANN. And for example, it's been suggested that, perhaps registrars would not only investigate who is complaints, but also then report back to ICANN the results of those investigations. And then that information could be, published on ICANN's website so that the Internet community would see not only the volume of who is complaints, but they would also see how responsibly, registrars take those complaints and act upon them. Because I do believe that in many, many cases, registrars receive who is inaccuracy complaints, take action on those complaints, and as a result, problems with who is are essentially corrected, but that may not be visible to the community because that information doesn't appear on ICANN's website. So that may be an opportunity for us to increase the visibility and transparency of our work at ICANN with respect to the who is data problem reporting system. And then finally, I do believe that the information and education steps that have been suggested here hold tremendous value for the community. Certainly the additional studies that the GNSO Council has called for, studies that will be funded in ICANN's budget, and that will allow those studies to be executed and move forward, will produce the additional data that I think the community believes will sort of round out all of the remaining, questions and gaps that exist inside of the WHOIS structure. And then we will be forced with some tough decisions as a community, decisions that will generally fall into two categories. What policy initiatives will be required in the future, and ultimately what additional enforcement and compliance work will be required as well. And those will be discussions and debates that will occur, I suspect, at the conclusion of all of the WHOIS studies, so that some decisions will be made about the future of who is and how it will be managed. I will tell you that Contractual Compliance does conduct an annual who is data reminder policy survey or audit with our registrars. And so once a year, we contact registrars and remind them to contact their customers and ask their customers to update their who is records. And I have to tell you that the compliance rate of that study is very high, in the 90% category. Registrars take that obligation seriously, but I do understand that registrars can only respond with respect to the validity of the information they receive from their customers. And that, at times, can be a linchpin that complicates the accuracy of the who is that is being provided, updated, in the system. We have received suggestions on how to change that, and I think that some of those suggestions need to be discussed both at the policy level and at the enforcement level to determine what the next steps, might be. But certainly, the annual reminder to registrants is another way in which enforcement of the existing policy can hopefully, continue to see improvements in WHOIS. But certainly information and education, finally, I think, is the key to building successfully on the work that's been started here with this study. Yeah, I've got a question from Richard Cox at Spam House, and then I'll go back to Bob Bruin.
I must say the WDPRS system has given us a lot of concern. Equally, it has to be said that it's better than what we had before, which was close to nothing. If I was a registrar, I would not see the WDPRS as a particularly good business case for fixing some of the fundamental problems if I was also working in league with some of the bad guys. And certain registrars most obviously are different types of bad guys in some cases. Now, at the moment, we submit a WDPRS report, they get 14 days, by which time the bad guy has probably run a mile and gotten some new domains, and then the information would be close to unusable. And even at that stage, nobody is taking a central view on whether the registrar was doing the right thing or not. There are only a small number that are not. I see Michaela getting worried. I wasn't talking about his.
The thing I was going to say is that there's one problem with the WDRPS.
Only one?
There's one very big problem.
Yeah.
Is that a lot of registrants, when they get the email, think it's spam.
I wonder why.
No, but we had a situation arise where one of our clients decided that since they were so sick of getting emails involving coloured ladies doing certain things, etc., 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 that they would block all mails containing the word black. And considering that our company name is Black Knight, that rendered all communication from us to them rather difficult. And we've seen this happen with transfers, we've seen this happen with who is things. And it's just, the problem is, it would be great if guys like yourselves and others within the community were to actually engage with us rather than beating us with a stick and help us to see what kind of practices we could implement that would make your life easier and my life easier. But one thing that I think cannot be stressed enough is that until such time as the privacy side of things and the freedom of speech side of things is addressed, we're going to be having this conversation every 6 months. And I can see myself losing the rest of my hair, going completely grey, and we'll still be having who is accuracy studies.
Well, we're certainly not trying to beat up the average registrar. And we do work with them, as I'm sure most registrars in the room would agree. But there are a small number who are causing a consistent problem, and they have got no business case whatever to fix it, because usually they're making money from the crooks, and they're going to continue doing so as long as ICANN allows them to. The point I made on Monday is that compliance is too damped. It doesn't get there quickly enough. There's got to be something that can be done that the registrar doesn't actually want to be done if the registrar is doing something sufficiently bad. And again, it is this severe exception I'm pointing to, but it's the same severe exception that Bob, Garth, and the law enforcement representatives present see with us every single day of the year. And that's what's got to be addressed. There are two mainstream registrars who are out and out intentional to deceiving the public and deceiving ICANN. I could name them. I'll give the information to David Geiser later. The point is that there is nothing in the system that provides them with a business plan to balance, and we've got to get that balance right. Privacy is important, but it's not the key here. You can write a very simple policy that will get around most of the difficulties we have with privacy if we can get enough people to put their heads together and try and realize there is a solution to be found rather than constantly arguing with each other. Our approach is to try and help find that solution.
Just coming back to you on that, from a registrar perspective, the number of queries we get in relation to who is pretty high, and in most cases it's to do with privacy. We've had one complaint from David's department in relation to who is accuracy, and it had actually nothing to do with who is accuracy. It was accurate, it's just there was a commercial dispute between the registrant and another party. And I mean, the thing is that, as things stand at present, there's no way for you to report a bad actor, criminal, or whatever, to David and his team, and not mix it up with a private individual who doesn't want their mobile phone number being used and abused by people.
But that's something we've got to fix as a community.
Okay, well, gentlemen, thank you. That was a very good discussion. I think we have time left for possibly one more question from the chat room, because we are about 30 minutes over on our time here. So, Rob, if you would read that last question for us, please.
Sure, David. John McCormick asks, has ICANN's enforcement policy been historically too lax, passive rather than proactive, and has it led to an increase in rogue or delinquent registrars, as mentioned by Nugent?
I'd like to thank John for that. And I think historically, our enforcement work has not been as proactive as it should be, and we're certainly changing that inside of ICANN's contractual compliance function today. And the work that we're doing now is relying on not only WDPRS and some of the proposed enhancements that we have on the table for WDPRS, but we're also learning to rely more on the community to provide information to us outside of WDPRS so that we can then use that information constructively, you know, first with registrars to see if we can fix the inaccuracies, and where we can't, or where we have registrars who simply ignore their obligations to, under the RAA, to investigate who is inaccuracies, there we're prepared to take, you know, stronger enforcement action going forward. And I think, John, what you'll find is that when we compile our Who Is Enforcement report, that will give you a historical look back on the enforcement activity in this area, and then it will give you a forward-looking view of where we can improve ICANN's contractual compliance enforcement activities. And that report will be available this year, probably earlier than later, for public review and comment as well. So I hope that will help, again, further inform the community of the work that we do, and again, make it clear that we rely on the community to help us in that respect. So where members of the community can reach out to me and members of my team, we truly appreciate that. And on that note, I think I'd like to just close off the session today. I think we have one more question from the floor.
Yes, it's there. You have to wait 10 seconds. I would like to address the gentleman there's comment that I think we should. It's time we should try to make a line between two discussions. One is the accuracy of the data, and the other one is what can be accessed by the public. So what my chairman has already made in the ICANN America results about tiered access, and I think that is what we should be looking at with the law enforcement community, and for the general public, it's a totally different discussion. And that's what I would like to see, that it's better addressed in the future, please.
I mean, it's a discussion we've been having with some of the other registry operators, such as URID and URID for .eu. Because one of the things that some people seem to forget is that, okay, the RAA says that I have to give everybody access to who is. They forget to the fact that who is servers get bombarded, and you can actually end up with a denial of service attack via who is, which is why some of the registrars aren't exactly overjoyed with the idea of giving a third party bulk access. Whereas if we had an authenticated system, then it'd be possible to control it, and I could say, right, that IP range has unrestricted access. This IP range over here, no.
Point well taken. And so on that, I'd like to conclude today's Who is Accuracy Study Workshop. I want to thank the participants here in Brussels, as well as the participants online in the remote chat room. And I hope all have a good day. Thanks so much. Bye now.